Thompson Guitars makes handcrafted instruments in Oregon and is a proud sponsor of the Travis Book Happy Hour. Their guitars are built with select tone woods, including Brazilian rosewood. Go to pktguitars.com for more information about their different models and appointments available from their custom shop.
Nobody actually cares about anything you do, sort of, but like I've realized recently that people do kind of pay attention, and I feel honored by that, and I want to honor that, you know. So in that way, it's like you want to show up for people or give them something. Realize that you have a platform, if you've been doing this long enough and you're lucky, that people are actually going to hear it. And so the opportunity to try and give them something nice, feel very lucky to get to do that.
Welcome to the Travis Book Happy Hour podcast. I'm Travis Book. This episode is brought to you by Thompson Guitars, makers of fine instruments handmade with love in Sisters, Oregon. The podcast is presented by Americana Vibes and The Bluegrass Situation, and our show is part of the Bluegrass Situation podcast network. You can dive into all things roots music anytime at thebluegrasssituation.com. Chris Eldridge and I met when I stepped off of an elevator with my bass at the International Bluegrass Music Association Convention in 2004. We spent 2 years traveling and making music together as members of the infamous String Dusters, and he is still one of my favorite musicians and humans. A member of the Punch Brothers and Mighty Poplar, he's also made great records with guitarist Julian Lage and plays in a duo with his wife, Kristen Andreasen. Our conversation started when he arrived at my house, and it didn't end until he pulled out of the driveway the next day, but we've captured some of the best parts here for the podcast. This episode was recorded live at 185 King Street in Brevard, North Carolina on November 12th, 2024.
Live from 185 King Street, the backyard of Brevard, North Carolina, it's a Travis Book Happy Hour. Yeah. Brought to you by Americana Vibes, The Bluegrass Situation, and Thompson Guitars. With tonight's very special guest, Chris Eldridge. Yeah. And now, your host, this guy right here, Travis Book.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you, everyone. Thanks so much for being here at 185 King Street. I'm so happy to have my dear friend, old friend, even though we're not old yet. We've known each other a long time. We don't get to see each other nearly enough, so I'm so glad he made the trip over from Nashville. Please make him feel welcome. This is Chris Eldridge.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you guys for providing such a warm welcome. It really is great to be here with you, Travis. And we're going to try and play some songs.
These lights are bright, aren't they?
They are very bright. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
overtook me in Jericho. I was standing on the corner reading the bill when up stepped the sheriff from Thomasville. Said, young man, ain't your name Brown? September the night you shut city down.
Thank you.
Oh yeah,
that's a pretty dark song, huh?
It's not the last one we're gonna do tonight.
I didn't realize. I grew up, you know, listening to Little Sadie on Manzanita, you know, and that's like, you know, one of the greatest things. But I never really thought about how kind of dark and messed up that song actually is. It's just like, oh, Little Sadie's great.
It's really messed up. It's really messed up.
You shouldn't do that. That wasn't actually me in that song. That's just an old song.
No, I mean, when you start to get that singer's existential crisis of what kind of things you want to be singing out into the world, it'll make you wonder about songs like Little Sadie. Yeah, you know,
it's true.
You'll be done doing Brown Mountain Lights, and you might not be able to
do
Little Sadie
anymore.
That. No, you can't do that anymore.
But as an antidote, as a potential antidote to the darkness of Little Sadie, we have for the next song, second song of the set, perhaps, I think this is perhaps maybe truly the happiest song of all time.
It might be.
Yeah, it's this great John Hartford song that I discovered surfing YouTube late one night, as a fella does, and it's called Living in the Mississippi Valley. Even on a Sunday morning, you know that I'll be there. And
we all come back for to be with you. Good neighbor, live a good life in the Mississippi Valley, down on a river, and you know that's where I want to be. And the night comes on like a blanket, chilly winds. People come out in the Mississippi Valley, Western Kentucky, Cairo, over in South St. Louis. There's a baseball game at the Legion Post on Tuesday. Have a good ride on the Julia Bell Swain. Go down to the river, you know that's where I want to be. And the fields of corn and the banjo music, catfish fry and the dual-boat payload, pushing up straight against the stars. And a letter come back from a girl in Calhoun County, here in the middle of the Mississippi Valley. I'm in love and you know that's where I want to be. Against the stars, and a letter come back from a girl in Calhoun County, here in the middle of the Mississippi Valley. I'm in love, and you know that's where I want to be.
Antidote, right?
Yeah. Well, if that was the happiest song we know, and now we're going to play the prettiest song we know. This song is called Poor Boy's Delight.
Saturday night, there's a chill in the air. You think that you might wanna dance with me, Molly, to an old fiddle tune played soft like the wind through Virginia in June. Soft like the wind through Virginia in June. Would you dance with me, Molly? Do you think it'd be wrong if you let down your hair? Let him play us a song. Come and dance with me, Molly. You got nothing to lose but to dance off the sole of your old dancing shoes. To dance off the soles of your old dancing shoes.
folly. It's Saturday night, there's a chill in the air. Do you think that you might wanna dance with me, Molly? To an old fiddle tune, playing soft like the wind through Virginia in June. Soft like the wind through Virginia in June. Soft like the wind through Virginia in June.
Folks, this is his happy hour. That is Travis Book.
I chose that song because Critter was in the infamous String Dusters when we recorded that song for our first record. He was the guitar player on that recording, and because it's also just a beautiful song.
Mary, grab the baby, river's rising. Muddy waters taking back the land. Old frame house can't take one more beating. It's too late to stay and make a stand. Yeah, the morning light shows water in the valley. Daddy's grave just went below the line. Things to save, you just can't take them with you. A flood will swallow all we leave behind. Won't be back to start all over. Cause what I felt before is gone. Mary, grab the baby, river's rising. Muddy waters taking back my home. Just one way to leave here. I'm gonna turn my back on what I felt below. Broken farms and shifting lands around me. Muddy waters changing all I know. Hard to say just what I'm losing. I ain't never felt so all alone. Mary, grab the baby, the river's rising. Muddy waters taking back my home. Yeah, muddy waters taking back my home.
Thank you. This is called Rygar.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. By the way, Travis Book on the bitchin' bass solo. Come on.
If you're enjoying this episode of the Happy Hour Podcast, check out episode 2 with John Stickley, our tribute to Tony Rice in episodes 11 and 12, episode 26 with Andy Falco, or episode 29 with Jordan Tice. Thanks for listening, and after the show, be sure to leave a rating and review. Now back to the show.
So, Critter, you grew up in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
I did.
And your father was a legendary banjo player and character, Ben Eldridge of the Seldom Scene.
He was.
This had you rubbing shoulders with the best of bluegrass at a very young age.
Yeah.
You were hanging out in great circles. What are your earliest memories of like a bluegrass hang?
Oh, well, I mean, my earliest memories of a bluegrass hang are definitely just the Seldom Scene, just backstage with the Seldom Scene, backstage at the old Birchmere. So the Birchmere is this, you know, really legendary club in the Washington, D.C. area. And it's one of the places, the Seldom Scene was a really interesting band because they're this legendary bluegrass band. They've been around for, you know, over 50 years now. And but really back in the 1970s, they were like one of the really pivotal bands in the music. They were this really famous, influential, well-loved band. And yet the cool thing about them is that they all had day jobs. They weren't trying to do music as a career. It was something that they just did because they enjoyed it. And, you know, John Starling was a doctor. My dad was a mathematician. Tom Gray worked at National Geographic. I mean, they were just guys with jobs in Washington, D.C. And so I think that actually kind of allowed them to make music just however they wanted to. They didn't feel like they needed to be anything other than just exactly what they liked. And so they... You know, they've made this really kind of unique sound, which is really cool. Anyway, so I grew up going to the Birchmere. They had this weekly gig because they didn't really tour. They used to have one at this place called the Red Fox in Bethesda, Maryland. And by the time I was alive, they had moved their gig over to this place called the Birchmere. And they did it every Thursday night at the Birchmere. So a lot of times I would go hang out with my dad and the other guys in the Seldom Scene at the Birchmere. And I just have these memories of... I just have so many memories of just being with those guys and just hearing that music. And the sound of that band is just seared so deeply into the core of my being. You know, hearing John Duffy's tenor, just coming through a PA, you know?
Yeah.
Hearing it blasting through a PA, hearing Mike Aldridge's dobro, just kind of like... blasting through a PA. I mean, it's just seared in me. And I can't, you know, now that I'm older, of course, when you're a kid, you know, you're a kid. Like, that was real life. I don't know any different. I didn't know anybody else could know anything any different. But now I look back on that and like, I'm amazed and humbled. And I just feel so lucky that I that was just a gift that was given to me, that I got to grow up in that environment with those people.
When did you pick up the guitar first?
I picked up the guitar, let's see. You know, I started playing guitar mostly because my friend, who some of you may know, Jay Starling, who now plays with Leftover Salmon. Jay Starling was John Starling's son. And the Starling family moved to my hometown of Fredericksburg, Virginia, when I was 4 or 5 years old, I guess. They lived in Alabama for a while, after Starling left the Seldom Scene to just practice medicine. And anyway, Jay's 2.5 years older than me, and Jay's awesome. He's just really cool. He's just really fun, and he's always been that way. And he also, when he first picked up, well, any instrument, he was kind of an instant shredder. So he started taking classical piano lessons, and he, you know, could play Fur Elise, you know, ripping, you know, which is not the kind of song that you think of like, well, you're ripping on Fur Elise, but somehow Jay Starling was like ripping on Fur Elise as like a 7-year-old. And he did that with every instrument. He started, and he got a little older and he picked up the guitar. And within a year, I mean, I'm not kidding, within a year of him picking the guitar up when he was probably 11, he could play with the remarkable authority. His guy at that point was Stevie Ray Vaughan. And so he could kind of just play with this authority like Stevie Ray. And so, and Jay was already my hero, being 2.5 years older than me and living right around the corner. And so I was like, well, music looks really cool. And it looks so easy too. Like, it must be so simple. So I picked up the guitar and I sucked. I was like the opposite of it. And there's not false modesty. It's just true. I was, I did not take to it immediately. I always loved music. I always felt very musical. Because I was always paid very close attention to music my whole life, as long as I can remember. But like it took me like a year or a year and a half before I could change from a G chord to a C chord in time. I'm not even kidding. I mean that's true. It just took whatever those circuits were in my brain. It took a long time for that to wire up. It wasn't just there. But I started when I was 9, and I really kind of fell deeply in love with it. I was listening to a lot of Southern rock at first, the Allman Brothers. I loved the Allman Brothers and, you know, Cream, classic rock, that kind of stuff. But when I was 11 years old, randomly, my Uncle David played me this record by this electric guitar player named Eric Johnson. And for whatever reason, that was when my life changed. Like, I kind of was doing it because I thought it was cool, but because Jay did it. But for whatever reason, when that happened, I was kind of like, wow, it just really spoke to my self at that point. And that's kind of when it's like my life changed and I became really dedicated all of a sudden. Tried to play electric guitar, never could really do it. But when I got to be a little older, my mom showed me some of these like really great Tony Rice records. You know, after he'd been playing with the David Grisman Quintet, it was kind of instrumental, kind of jazz influenced and inflected, and started getting into that, and kind of from there just got back into bluegrass.
Is that when you knew that this was like going to be your thing? When did you know that like you weren't going to be you weren't going to take the path that your father took? This is what you were going to do.
I was in college, so I actually, because the path, I didn't realize, again, you don't know. Like, if you're around something, if it's just your reality, then it's your reality, and you think it's not weird. So I thought, I went to college. I enrolled, not in music school, but I went to Oberlin College in Ohio. A big part of the reason I wanted to go there is because there was a really high-level music conservatory under the roof. Incredible classical program, jazz program. But it was also a good academic institution, and I actually thought I was going to study math, too. I kind of enrolled thinking I'd be a math major. And I just, you know, my first semester, I didn't ever go to class. I just was sitting in my room in my boxer shorts playing, you know, along to Tony Rice and Bela Fleck records all day. And so I, you know, it became clear at a certain point where some of my teachers and advisors kind of steered me. They were like, why don't you do this music thing? You could do this, you know? And so I kind of got adopted into the jazz guitar. I never was a jazz guitar major, but the professor there, Bobby Ferraza, the jazz guitar professor, kind of adopted me as like an auxiliary member of the jazz guitar pod. And so, I became a music major. And I had some really fortunate things. Being at Oberlin, there was this really cool thing called Winter Term, this amazing program that they do where you take the month of January off from normal classes. And the idea is you design a program of study. It could be anything. You know, a teacher would have to approve it, but if somebody approves it, you could do anything. And so you get really like hands-on work with something you actually care about. It's a really good way to learn. My sophomore year, I basically, to make a long story short, I went and studied with Tony Rice. I called Tony. My friend was like, "Hey, well, what do you want to do for winter term?" I was like, "Man, I don't know what I'm going to do." He's like, "Well, what would you do in your wildest dreams?" I was like, "Well, my wildest dreams, I'd go down to Tony Rice's house and hang out with him." And he was like, "Didn't you grow up knowing him?" I was like, "Yeah, but he's like, you know, mysterious. You can't like call Tony." He was like, "You know him, right?" I was like, "Well, yeah." He's like, "Call him up." So I called him up, and Tony was like, Yeah, man, that sounds cool. Come on down." So I went and stayed at Tony's house, and you know, Tony'd kind of this is like the year before. Tony'd like kind of taken me under his wing a little bit. Anyway, I started hanging out with him when he recognized that I was getting serious about guitar. I'd become a real Tony disciple at that point. I'm gonna move my mic because my neck is starting to hurt looking at you. I'd become like a real big disciple of Tony's, So he started. He kind of really took me under his wing. He was really my mentor, and that time I spent with him down at his house in Reidsville was life changing. You know, that really changed my whole approach towards music. It was really, really cool.
What is your favorite thing about guitar?
Man, that's a great question. I mean, it's hard to narrow it down to one thing. I know. There's so many cool things about it. Like I love the way a great acoustic guitar can sound. When I have the opportunity to have a great guitar in my hands, I'm happy to just go like this. And just listen to that.
Just vibe out on it.
I mean, it's just such a beautiful sound. But I also like finding things that are, that are kind of dense and interesting. So it's like there's this puzzle to it. There's this map. There's a logic to it. You know, I was going to be a math major. Like, there's a logic to it in a way, but it's also very creative. And I've always been kind of fascinated with getting sounds that, this might sound cheesy, but for whatever reason, kind of like speak to me kind of deep inside. Like sometimes you just hear sounds and you just care about them.
Yeah.
And I've just always been interested in playing the guitar and trying to find those sounds.
That's so cool, man. What is the highest you'll capo?
Oh, I feel like I've done 11th fret before, but that's not...
Oh, my God.
But, you know...
Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't know.
Are there rules about these kind of things?
If you can get it on there, it's like a cool sound, you know?
Man, I mean, I was expecting 9.
Yeah.
But 11, I mean, you really are special.
11, man. you have to work pretty hard to do 11.
You've got
to
get a pretty wide capo.
You've got to contort, yeah.
So where did you, there's this tune we played in the first set, Mississippi Valley, this great Hartford tune.
Yeah.
Where did you discover that?
That was, yeah. So I was surfing YouTube one night, which is what we all do, at night. And I was back around 2010, I'd gotten really obsessed with John Hartford. You know, I'd have my phases with all my kind of acoustic music superheroes. Went through, obviously, my Tony Rice phase, which is still ongoing today. But Bela Fleck, you know, was like just, Bela was like just a superhero to me and all these people. But when I got around 2010, I had my aha moment with John Hartford and just was like, whoa, Hartford is... the man, you know, he's this incredibly prolific creator. He was just like a creative faucet. He was one of these guys where creativity for him was just, it was like a faucet that turned on. And you could tell that he was not a guy who second-guessed himself. He was just wide open. And that was just so inspiring to me. I love his lyric writing. I feel like his lyric writing is very evocative. I love his musical sensibilities. He's just a lifer, and he's amazing. So I was in this deep John Hartford phase, and... watching this riverboat documentary that he was narrating, and the end credits of this thing came up, and it was him just, you know, on the deck of a riverboat with credits going, you know, up the screen, and this song came on in the background, and it was just so beautiful. He was kind of singing along with it, you know, miming along, and it was like the happiest song I ever heard. And so I learned it from that video with, again, the credits kind of going up and up and up. And it turns out it was on this record. I forget the name of the record, but it was a record that came out in the 1980s, produced by Cowboy Jack Clement. It's out of print now. You can't, like, really find it on the internet. He was way into doing triple fiddle. Everything was in, like, three-part harmony on fiddle on that record. And that song was on there, and it's just it's such a cool thing. Here, actually, since we're talking about it, I'll just show you, because I tried to learn it, you know. The melody of the tune is really cool. It's kind of squirrely, kind of neat. But then you hear it in harmony. Oh, well, just wait. So then he did it in harmony, but you can stack on the first harmony, and then this becomes so much happier. It's like already, it's like. And I was like, so those are two of the fiddles, and then I was like, well, that's not getting it. We really need all three fiddles. So I'll play it slow because I kind of biffed it when we played the song. But here's what it actually sounded like. And this whole record, it's just such a joyful sound. It sounds like this. You want to actually play bass with me for this? Because it'll make more sense. It's so good. John Hartford. Is that? But anyway, that's not. I mean, I'm just. That's just what the fiddles are playing. That's just. But it's. You know, I just thought that was so cool. And John Hartford is the man. So there you go.
Yeah, and John Hartford is the man. The version you do with Julian on that record is so cool because it's got both of you, essentially playing all of those parts, and it almost sounds like. It sounds kind of like otherworldly. It's worth checking out. So you helped found. The infamous String Dusters.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I do.
I do too, because I was there. Now, soon after that, you got the opportunity to make a record with Chris Thiele and form the Punch Brothers, which you did to great success. And obviously, you know, there's no other way that the universe could have worked out. At the time, it was a little jarring to everyone involved, but, you know, obviously the String Dusters are perfect the way they are with Andy Falco, and the Punch Brothers are perfect with you. That said, Was that a difficult decision?
Oh my God, it was the hardest decision I'd ever made in my life. Almost to this day, I don't know if anything has topped that in terms of honestly just being painful. You know, that sucked. I hated it because I loved the Dusters, and we started it. You know, it was still is. You know, such an all for one for all kind of Three Musketeers band. You know, and that was like just woven so deeply into the DNA, And I love you guys.
We love you too.
And I love the band. I'm so proud of the music that we made. But yeah, you know, I had this opportunity to, you know, Thiele he's just such a, you know, I called Tony and actually sought his counsel about this when that was all going on. And he said, I talked to a few of the elders. I talked to Tony and Bela and a few of these guys who, and they were like, look, if you had, like, Thiele's like this special kind of defining, you know, kind of, in his way, once in a lifetime musician. If you have a chance to make music with somebody like that, you need to do it. You're going to grow. There are going to be things that come out of that that you just can't even imagine. You don't even know, but you have to do it. And I, ultimately, I kind of felt that too. I felt like, well, I think they're right, you know. And it was really hard. It was really hard. But ultimately, that seemed like the right call, and I think it was the right call for everybody. Because again, like, you guys got Falco, who's just like the man, and perfect for the band. And I got to do all these other kind of crazy things and grow in ways, again, that were not imaginable to me. And so, yeah, it was crazy. But there it is, yeah.
That's really cool. I'm glad you felt like it was the right choice. I feel like it was the right choice, too. But I'm sure that must have been really weird. Weird time in your life.
It was. Well, I will say this, and it's kind of funny talking to you about this, but I will give advice to anybody listening to this podcast. If you're going to announce that you're leaving a band, you know, give them like, you know, don't give them a year and a half's notice, which is what I did. I was like, I don't want to leave them in the lurch. You know, 2 months is great.
Yeah, I would like to take this opportunity in public to apologize to you for maybe not being as nice as I could have been to you at the end of that 16-month period.
Hey, baby, it's all love now here. It's all good.
I'm really sorry.
It's accepted, but thank you. I get it.
Are there any musicians that you're into that you want more people to know about?
Oh, man. Yeah, there's a guitar player who I love so much. Her name's Ella Rae Feingold. She's like a funk guitar player, plays with all the baddest cats, but I just love the way she plays. All she does is play rhythm guitar.
Sweet.
She's so epic. She's one of my favorite guitar players in the world. You know, let's see. Who do people... Well, everybody knows about Julian. Yeah, let's see. Haley... Everybody knows about Madison Cunningham by now. She's epic.
certainly hope so. She's incredible.
She's so incredible. Haley Hendricks is a really, really remarkable musician. I don't know. I'm gonna think of like 10 people who I should be talking about right now.
Three's a really good answer.
Okay, cool.
That's a great start. Yeah. I mean, we can't remember that many names, so three's good.
Yeah.
What so far is a career highlight for you?
Oh man, I had a good one last year, which was playing with James Taylor. Got to play with James Taylor. So Punch Brothers has this new. We've got a podcast. This thing called the Energy Curfew Music Hour, and and we've made one season of it so far, and it's kind of this crazy show. It takes place in sort of a fictional future. So the show has a frame, right? You need a frame to kind of set up, like, why are we just playing acoustic music all the time? You don't really need that, but we do have one. And the idea with this is that it's a fictional future, climate change, whatever. We're trying to ration energy, so acoustic music, where, you know, nobody wants to mess with amps and things like that, electric guitars and all. It's like, we're getting back to acoustic instruments. And so we played all this music, and we have all these amazing special guests who came on the show. We had James Taylor, we had Casey Musgraves, Jason Isbell, Sylvan Esso, which was a really fun one, Wolfpack, basically, Maddie Cunningham, Louis Cato, all kinds of, John Batiste, I mean, all kinds of really cool people. And we collaborate with all these people. We play with them. We kind of become their band. And that's been really fun. It was a lot of work. It was crazy. But that was... I think playing with James was a real highlight. Yeah.
That's so cool. Speaking of from the future, do you think at all about your future?
A little bit. I don't know. You know. Yeah, just trying to make it home to my kiddo and
short term?
Yeah, I'm more of a short term thinker, I guess.
Do you think at all about your legacy?
Not too much, I guess. I mean, I've only become, this might sound weird, but I've only become aware recently that nobody actually cares about anything you do, sort of. But like realized recently that people do kind of pay attention, and I feel honored by that, and I want to honor that, you know. So in that way, it's like you want to show up for people or give them something. Realize that you have a platform if you've been doing this long enough, and you're lucky that people are actually going to hear it, and so the opportunity to try and give them something nice is something that is I feel very lucky to get to do that.
I just have a handful more questions here. What inspires you, and like why do you do what you do? Like, what's your motor?
Well, I think that last thing that I just said, and as life has gone on, it becomes more inspiring. Recognize one thing that inspires me is this idea that everybody is totally unique. Like everybody, we all have, like, you know, fingerprints work for a reason, right? Like if you find fingerprints somewhere, those fingerprints are going to belong to one person and one person only, and there's not going to be another person who has those same fingerprints, right? And so I think that's just kind of a physical manifestation of what's actually true about the inside of all of us, about who we are, about us as spiritual beings, just like things that happen to somehow show up and we have consciousness and here we are on this planet. And that means that we all have likes and dislikes. We all have music, for instance, that we love. I love some music. There's some music I really don't like, and that's cool. Whatever that particular stew is what makes me me. And recognizing that each and every one of us has that unique stew, that unique recipe that makes up who we are, and that's worthy of being celebrated. And I actually genuinely find a lot of inspiration in that idea, and I wish everybody else would kind of lean into that for themselves and just own, like, hey, nobody's like you. What do you got? You know, I think that's where it's at.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Every time I put out an episode, I have to pull out a 90-second clip for the reel to promote it. That was it. As it was going down, and I was like, there's my reel right there. One more serious question, then we'll get to the lightning round. This probably goes along with what you've been talking about for the last couple of questions, but what is it that you aspire to?
Oh, well, I guess, doing something that, just feels honest and unblocked and true. I think that's the main thing. I mean, musically anyway, that's what I want to do, and unafraid, you know? It's not lost on me as I say these things that I've never put out a solo record, you know? It's like, you know, but I feel like I'm comfortable being a unique person. Like, I feel like I'm my own thing, but something about just being unblocked, you know, in that way, just really letting it fly. That's musically, and I think as long as we kind of are able to be the most true, unburdened, like, version of ourself while we're making whatever it is that we make, whether those are, you know, shots on the basketball court or songs or, you know, pieces of sculpture or whatever, or speeches, you know, that's kind of where it's at. That's where everybody's thriving, and that I want to get better at that. That's kind of a lifelong quest, though, for all of us. I'd say the other thing that I aspire to is just trying to hopefully be a sorry, this is so sincere, but just a good, kind person, and, you know, makes everybody kind of realize that we can be kind to each other. I think if we try and model that in a small place, the world gets better, and the world is a disaster these days. Nobody can handle social media. Humans, we're just dumb apes. We can't handle social media.
No, it's so bad.
No, it exacerbates everything that's terrible about us as a species. So let's put that down and just be cool together.
Can we just be cool?
Yeah.
All right. Real quick here, let's do this lightning round, and then we'll get back to the music. You all have been such a great audience and so patient. Thank you so much, and thank you, Critter, for your insight. Dogs or cats?
Dogs, 1,000%, billion. I love cats too, but dogs.
Nice caveat. I like that. You don't want to make any enemies. You just want to be nice.
Yeah.
City or country?
Ooh. Oh man, I pass. I can't. They both have their place.
No, that's legit.
They have their place. I lived in Brooklyn for 7 years. I loved it. I'm never going to live there again. I live in Nashville now. It's killer. I've got, like, a cool community. There are all kinds of people I know. And yet, when, like, come here, Travis lives next to a farm, and there were people, like, you know, milking goats out front this morning when I looked out the window.
And cattle were lowing while we were rehearsing.
Yeah.
Literally lowing.
I properly love that.
Look, I would also like to acknowledge that that this sort of binary system, black and white system of the lightning round is sort of antithetical to the entire thing that we're about here, and everything is on a spectrum, but it's just fun, okay? Yeah. It's just fun and games. acoustic or electric?
Acoustic.
Would you go with sun or rain?
Sun. Yeah.
Zeppelin or the Stones?
Zeppelin.
Thank you. What is your favorite city?
Ooh, favorite city. Ooh, Amsterdam is cool. I like Amsterdam. It's beautiful.
That's legit. What color is your front door?
My front door is brown. It's kind of like I don't even know what you call it. It's got a little bit of maroon in it, but it's mostly brown. Oxblood? Maybe it's oxblood. Yeah.
Whoa. What are you afraid of?
Oh. What am I afraid of? Kind of everything.
Oh, my God.
So so you got to be aspirational with your thing.
Best answer ever. What makes you happy?
My daughter.
All right. That's Chris Eldridge there. Critter. And, man, I'm so excited to play some more music now that we've talked a little bit. Yeah, Critter and I spent a better part of 2 years in sort of the hardest part of a career as a musician, when you are just getting something off the ground and nobody has any idea who you are and there's no context.
But I have to say, looking back, you know, and I think for me and other older musicians I've talked to, it's almost universally, like, the best part. Like, looking back on that, like, those are amazing days. You remember, like, we used to drive? Do you remember getting in the G20?
G20.
Yeah, that was our van. There was this old conversion van that, did you find it or Jesse found it?
Jesse found it. It was blue.
But you guys used to work on it together.
Oh, yeah.
Because it broke down a lot.
Constant work.
And it was this blue conversion van. And, you know, I remember we would play a gig I remember one time we played this gig in Kentucky. And then we had a gig out near Durango, like a day later, like the next day.
Yeah.
And we had to drive. And that's, I don't know if you guys know, but that's about a, you know, 20, 22 hour drive. And so we just drove. We just didn't stop. It was just people rotated. There was a little bed in the back, or the back seat could fold down into a bed. And we just, you know, that was what life was like back then. And it was amazing. Those are like some of the happiest times.
It was pretty pure.
Ever. It was pure.
It was pretty pure.
Yeah. All right. Just me?
Yeah, you for a little bit.
Okay.
I'll give you this song in my simple way. I'll give you my treasured things I've collected in the safe. These keys are all off the door. What's mine is already yours, 'cause I'm writing my first will that says you'll be mine. First will and my testament. Is a witness, babe. Oh, say you'll be mine. When youth is all gone away, no time to take or to give. And my riches are measured in memories of the days we live. I'll say to you, like I'm telling you now, I'll write it in stone to let it be known that when I take my rest, no one will contest that this is my first will that says you'll be.
Thank you. That my wife, Kristen Andreasen, and I wrote that song. Thank you. You might know Kristen. She was in Uncle Earl. You guys, we got some Uncle Earl fans. We must. Uncle Earl, best understood. I mean, they're an awesome band, but best understood, I'm sure you would agree, Travis, as the band you are most psyched to see on a festival lineup, because the Hang is just the absolute greatest. They're just, they bring the vibes for everybody, Uncle Earl. They don't play that much anymore, but...
they don't.
Yeah, but back in the day, the String Dusters and Uncle Earl, that's how Kristen and I got together, is that we used to be booked on all the same festivals. Well, they played at that festival in Kentucky, by the way, before we drove on that. But like we used to see them, you know, one weekend in California. There was this one summer, and you know, and the next weekend in Kentucky, the weekend after that, we'd all be at Grey Fox in New York, and we just played so many gigs together that we kind of made a infamous String Dusters and Uncle Earl super band called either Uncle Duster, or my favorite, String of Earls.
We did. We played a handful of gigs like that, or yeah. we Grey Fox Dance Tent, or something like that.
So fun.
Those are the days.
Yeah. Anyway, Kristen's a truly great one.
Off misbehaving with him, not with me. A pessimistic tomorrow is all that I see. Well, I can live with my version of the world going past. Yeah, the hard times we've had don't look so bad through the bottom of the glass. So turn up the jukebox, dim down the line. I don't need no vision, 2020 tonight. London told me what they see and hear. They must like to watch me get tears in my beer. Well, I found a new someone. You may say she's trash. Yeah, she ain't much to see, but she looks good to me through the bottom of the glass. So turn up the jukebox, dim down the lights. I don't need no vision, 2020 tonight. So I won't see. The bottom of the glass, through the jokes and the tears, through the smoke and the beers, through the bottom of the glass.
This has been the Travis Book Happy Hour Podcast. Thanks for listening. Huge thanks to Chris Eldridge, Thompson Guitars, Americana Vibes, 185 King Street, Derek Stutt, and The Bluegrass Situation. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe and leave a positive review. It really helps us out. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Travis Book Happy Hour and online at thetravisbookhappyhour.com. And remember, it's okay to be happy.